This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The literary map of Detroit isn't your typical predictable map of the Motor City. This map looks at Detroit through the eyes of writers, poets, storytellers. Frank Rashid created the literary map of Detroit. He is a lifelong Detroiter, and he's a professor of English at Mary Grove College on Detroit's northwest side. Frank, describe the literary map for us.
Well, it's a website that has a map of Detroit with different points on it that have been identified in fiction, poetry, drama, memoir, by writers, by important writers who've lived in Detroit or taken Detroit seriously. And I thought it was an interesting way to look at Detroit and at literature by focusing on the locations, the sites that are important. And there are literary maps of other places, and I thought Detroit has a tremendous literary legacy, and it deserves its own literary map. So about 8 or 10 years ago, I decided to get it going.
And you started, how did you, picking through literature and realizing, oh, I knew in this novel they referenced such and so.
I'm a lifelong Detroiter, and I've had a long-standing interest in both the city and in literature and in maps. And so so I like the relationship between reality, the real life of literature, or the real life of the city, and then the imagination, the imaginative world of literature. And I like to form that connection and to see the relationship. I think there is a relationship between literature and the city itself, its politics, its economics, its history, its policy. And I think that the real life informs literature, and literature can help to inform real life, can help us to think about the city in different ways.
And speaking of thinking about the city in different ways, there has been no shortage of stuff written about Detroit by journalists, especially as the city slid into bankruptcy and it's now trying to fight its way out. How do you think the perspectives and the messages of those journalists differ from the poets and the storytellers and the writers that you profile in this map?
Well, I think there's a difference between journalists at public radio and journalists elsewhere. And there are some really good journalists in Detroit who've done excellent work with the Free Press and the news. There are also some really great, there's also been some really great coverage of Detroit through the New York Times. But by and large, we see a real superficial treatment of the city of Detroit. And I think the literature of Detroit, in combination with the study of history and economics and sociology, can really help us to understand what has gone on. I think the narratives connected with the city of Detroit are really generally wrongheaded, and that a real serious academic look at Detroit that's interdisciplinary. What we do at Mary Grove is a real interdisciplinary approach to the city through the Institute for Detroit Studies, which I work with. And we try to pull the expertise of different academics and scholars and researchers, as well as creative artists, to change the narrative, or at least challenge the popular narratives that are out there.
So what is that narrative that's emerging, especially as you say, you bring in sociologists, you bring in economists, you bring in writers. What's the narrative?
Well, the narrative, basically, what we're trying to do is challenge the narrative that says, well, that Detroit's problems stem from a simple cause, like 1967, or like a particular politician, or like the widespread tendency, I think, to blame Detroiters themselves for the problems of the city. If you study the literature of Detroit, if you study its history, if you study its sociology, its economics, you see how really pathetic that kind of explanation is. Detroit is the result, you know, the contemporary Detroit's problems stemmed from deindustrialization following World War II. It stemmed from federal policy, from federal housing policy that subsidized the development of suburbs with long-term low-interest mortgages for white people only, leaving Detroit largely an African-American and poor city. And if you study the writing about the city of Detroit, if you study the writers who've engaged the city, starting way back in the Depression, when Robert Hayden and Dudley Randall were starting to write poetry about the city, moving through the 40s and 50s and to the poetry of Philip Levine and Lawrence Joseph, the novels of Harriet Arnold and Joyce Carol Oates, the poetry of Jim Daniels, Toy Derricotte, Melba Joyce Boyd, Naomi Long Madgett. These are writers who are really seriously looking at the city of Detroit and looking at the narrative as understands that the role of inequality, economic inequality. I heard Kevin Orr say, you know, we dug this hole and we have to dig ourselves out of it. Well, we didn't dig this hole. And I think that if you really look at the serious issues that have confronted Detroit and Detroiters, this was a hole that was dug by systemic forces rather than by the people of Detroit.
Over the course of time,
of
decades.
Many, many decades.
I have to say, as I looked at some of the sites marked on the literary map, some of them were surprising to me. Telegraph Road and the Detroit Waste Incinerator do not to me smack of literary significance.
Right.
But I'm wrong, right?
Well, what's interesting is what the way a poet or what a poet or a writer will think about to discuss. The Detroit Waste Incinerator is a serious environmental issue or raises serious environmental issues. And Ron Allen, the poet, took on the incinerator, went after it, and started to look at it poetically and to attack the damage that is done to poor people in the city because of our willingness to build a huge waste incinerator that would not get built anywhere else. And so that's the kind of thing that I think writers of Detroit have done. They focus on specific sites. You focus on Durfee Middle School. Philip Levine writes this great poem about that's set at Durfee Middle School on Linwood at right next to Central High School. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think, well, this is it's a wonderful building and it's a wonderful little school, but you wouldn't have thought of it as a site of a really well-known major American poem by the former poet laureate of the United States. So there is tremendous, writers focus on the sites that are important in their lives. And Philip Levine grew up in that area and he focuses on a number of places that are on the near west side of Detroit, which is near where I grew up. So
yes,
I have particular affinity for it.
What are you hoping that this map can contribute to the conversation about Detroit's future?
Well, there's a scholar of literary maps in Italy who writes that his name is Franco Moretti, and he says that literature and literary maps should force us to think, should make us think by making this connection between real life and imaginative literature, should help us to, should inspire us to think of things in new ways. I had a class in Detroit in literature with my graduate students this past semester, and we were struggling with an issue in Joyce Carol Oates' novel, Them, which is a really tough novel, not an easy read. And it's a study of violence and psychology and the psychology of the city. And we were trying to look at what's the connection between all of this violence and the personal relationships of the characters and what eventually happens in 1967, which is there in the novel. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem connected. And then finally, one of my students, Jacqueline Johnson, said, it's like Langston Hughes's poem Harlem. And in a way, what it does is help us to understand. He asks, what happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode? And the connection between the personal lives of people in that poem and the ultimate possibility of violence is what Joyce Carol Oates, in a much more elongated fashion in her novel, is getting at. And of course, I hadn't thought of it at all. It was the combination of Jacqueline's ideas and the literature we were discussing and the understanding then of the deep roots of urban violence, which Philip Levine looks at in another poem when he focuses on the Rouge Plant and sees the kind of industrial violence that we've done to the landscape, the way in which we have not just that 1967 is not an isolated event. Mm-hmm. He ends that poem after looking at the violence done to the environment by industry and by the factory. He ends his poem with the line, "We burn this city every day," that we've been doing it for a very long time. And it's not just what happened in a few days in 1967, but it's something that's been happening since Western culture arrived in what is now southeastern Michigan.
So it's asking people to go beyond that superficial viewpoint of Detroit's troubles, and you do see it when you read reader comments at the end of stories about the Grand Bargain and its consistent, they made their problem, let them bail themselves out. So you really see this as contributing to the future and the salvation of Detroit.
I think that I also teach a course, an interdisciplinary course in Detroit, contemporary Detroit, with a historian and a sociologist. And we love the way we can look at something in that Thomas Sugrue will write, the great historian of contemporary Detroit, or of post-war Detroit at least, and then look at a poem and see the way in which Robert Hayden, for example, will tell the story of Paradise Valley from the perspective of one who lived there and who grew up there and the challenges that he faced, whereas Sugrue, who didn't live there but grew up in Detroit, will give us the real kind of solid academic approach to it. And the students love to examine the difference between those two, how they complement one another. And I think that's the real important thing, is not to simply look at literature in isolation as this kind of pristine, wonderful thing. You know, a poem can be a beautiful thing. There are a few poems more beautiful than Robert Hayden's Those Winter Sundays. But when we look at it and then add the context of the history, it has even more force. It has even more intensity. And I think the different disciplines feed on one another and do so in really interesting and intriguing ways. And that's where the creativity of the reader comes in, by pulling together the different aspects of life and literature that you see in our urban environment. You understand maybe that it's not just about blaming certain people or a certain politician or a certain event, but that it's something. These are issues of longstanding injustice, longstanding, poor planning, poor ideas. But they're not just about Detroit. They're about the United States. They're about American culture, and we really have to look at that. That's why I love the novels of Oates or Jeffrey Eugenides. Or Harriet Arno, who really look at Detroit as not in isolation, but as something that is really a very American city.
It's the literary map of Detroit. You can easily find it by going to marygrove.edu, and you can do a quick search for literary map of Detroit, or you could Google literary map of Detroit, and it will pop right up. And we've been speaking with the creator of the literary map of Detroit, Mary Grove English professor and lifelong Detroiter, Frank Rashid. Thank you so much, Frank.
Thank you, Cynthia.